Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Welcome to Stagecraft, Variety's theater podcast, bringing you behind the scenes with the stars and creators of the hottest shows on Broadway, off Broadway, and beyond. I'm your host, Gordon Cox. On this episode of Stagecraft, I talk to Tim and Tyne Daly, the real-life brother and sister now playing siblings on stage in Teresa Rebeck's off-Broadway play, Downstairs. Both Dailies will be familiar to listeners from their regular TV work, with Tim starring in TV shows like Wings and the current Madam Secretary, and Tyne appearing in series including Cagney and Lacey and the reboot of Murphy Brown. Both have done plenty of stage work as well, with Tyne winning a Tony for Gypsy in 1990 and starring in more recent Broadway shows like Rabbit Hole, Mothers and Sons, and It Should Have Been You. But this is the first time the two of them have acted on stage together, and in fact, have acted opposite each other in any significant way. And on stage at the Cherry Lane is about the only time you're going to be able to see these two together these days, because they're both starring in the play 8 performances a week, while at the same time juggling busy TV schedules during the day. Hi, Tim.
Hello.
Thanks for being here.
I'm glad to be here. Thanks.
So the idea was to try and get you and Tyne together in the same room so you could record this podcast together. But it turns out that that's basically impossible at the moment, because not only are you doing this play every night, but you're both working pretty significant roles in TV shows, you and Madam Secretary and Tyne in the Murphy Brown reboot. So that sort of leads to my question of when actors who film TV shows in New York, which a lot of them do, they go to their day job on the set, and then they do a show at night. And those are both TV and stage are extremely time consuming things, especially when you're rehearsing for a play. So how do you even make that work as an actor?
Well, the first thing you do is you have to beg everyone to work with you.
Yeah, do you have to cajole your Madam Secretary?
You have to beg the people at Madam Secretary to work around your schedule, and then you have to beg the people at the play to have a non-traditional rehearsal schedule. Right. And what does that mean exactly?
Sort of.
It means that it's not a standard thing. It's like sometimes you can work from 10 in the morning till 6 in the evening, and sometimes you work from 6 in the evening till 11 at night. Right. And your days off are different, and it's just an ongoing adventure of trying to get everybody in the room at the same time.
And how willing are people to go along with that? For instance, at your TV show, were they?
Well, I think I have some goodwill over there.
Okay, good.
I've been on Best Behavior, so. Yeah.
I hear you broke both of your legs, so I don't
well,
know.
Well, there's that. But I didn't do that at them.
That's true. I think that's right.
I wasn't yelling at anyone over there. Well, I was breaking them. I think they recognize that there's sort of a unique and maybe even historical moment at hand here, because Tyne and I have never been in the theater on stage together before. Right. We did this play before at the Dorset Theater Festival, but
that was actually one of my questions. Was part of the reason this was possible is that you had done this before, and it was a little less of a lift for you to revisit it while you were shooting your TV show, or was that not part of it?
That's a good question, because I went into this thinking, oh, this is going to be easy. We did this before. This is Cinchy. We'll just go here. The line.
It was a couple years ago.
Like,
yeah,
it was a year and a half ago.
Year and a half. Yeah.
And the lines did not just come right back. It was kind of an adventure. We did, though, understand the relationship of the people in the play, and there wasn't a lot of that sort of initial work of digging the mine of the people's psyches to try to figure out who they were. We had that idea in hand. That said, we had enough time to, I think, deepen our performances and deepen our understanding of our characters and of the play, which is great. I forget the initial question was something about scheduling.
Yeah, and something about scheduling.
Basically, the basic answer is it's a shit show. You do what you can. You try to pretend you're not tired, you know, and then you get out there and give everything you got.
Right. And tell the listeners a little bit about sort of how this play came about. You first worked with Teresa up at the Dorset Theater Festival, which is in Vermont, yes?
Yes. Teresa has a house in Dorset, and I have a house about 20 minutes away. And a woman named Dina Janis, who's the artistic director there, asked me to do a play, and I wanted to do something, and I read the scene that Teresa wrote, and I did it and loved it. And Teresa and I kind of loved each other, and She said,
"What was Teresa involved in that production? Was she, or did she just see it?
She was around. She was around, and she was around enough to answer questions. And I'm not sure how much tweaking she did, maybe a little bit. And she said, "What are we going to do next?" And I said, "I don't know. Why don't you write a play for me and my sister?" And she said, "Don't say that unless you mean it." And I said, "I mean it," thinking there is no freaking way she's going to write a play for me and my sister. And about a year later, she presented me with a stack of pages that didn't even have a title on it. And she said, "Here it is. It's called Downstairs." I was like, "No way. You wrote it."
And did she, at the time that you guys were talking, did she pepper you with questions about your relationship with your sister? Did she, like, how much digging did she do about you and your relationship with Ty, and as she thought about characters that you would play?
If she did digging, it was so brilliantly disguised that I was unaware of it. I mean, we were close. We're friends, and she knows something about my past, and I've told her stories about, you know, growing up, and she's told me some stories about her. So we know something about each other, and I think she put that stuff in her subconscious and then let it come out, and some of it made it into the play and some of it didn't.
And what do you feel like, what does she get right about your relationship with your sister as you were reading it? What surprised you about what she sort of nailed?
Well, I think she gets, she understands love. You know, she understands love, and she understands the will of siblings to protect and help and save each other. I also think she understands that people in the same family can have completely and utterly different memories of the exact same events and sort of feelings about what it was like to grow up in a certain place. You know, and I've found that, you know, I have three older sisters, and I know, and I say this without pride and with a little bit of, not shame, but concern about myself, I have actually inserted myself into stories that I've heard so many times, and I remember them vividly. I remember every single detail. I would pass a lie detector test if someone asked me if that story was true, and my sisters had to sit me down and say, "Timmy, you were not born when this happened. There's no way you could remember it." And I would swear it's true. So she gets that right.
And so, and you mentioned that you had not worked with Tyne on stage before, but mm-hmm. you'd worked with her on screen previously, is that right?
Yeah, I mean, she did a little thing on Wings back in the day, and I did a little thing on Judging Amy, and she played a part in a movie that I produced sort of as a favor, but nothing significant.
Together, but not a lot, right?
Yes, but nothing significant.
Yeah. And, you know, I'll tell you, I went into Downstairs thinking that it would be sort of a light, frothy sibling comedy, and it's funny, but it goes dark. Were you surprised by what... I was surprised, I think, because I was expecting a light, frothy sibling comedy. Uh-huh. Were you surprised when you read it about sort of what it tackles and how dark it goes?
No, not really. I wasn't surprised by it. I was actually delighted because I thought, not by the darkness for the sake of being dark, but by... The territory that it explored. And the interesting thing about the play is that it's a lot more resonant now than it was when we did it a year and a half ago.
Why? Tell us more.
Well, one of the themes of the play is sort of identifying and living with and dealing with demons. And for a lot of us in American society right now, we feel like we're living with a demon. I won't name any names, but...
we'll leave it up to the listeners.
And having lived with a demon for a couple of years, we understand it better, and we feel the stress and the fear and the terror of that more. So I think that our audiences are understanding it and identifying with it more strongly. Mm-hmm.
As you mentioned, this is the first sort of extended period of really working with Tyne, particularly on stage. What surprised you about how she works as an actor? Did anything surprise you in terms of how she works, and what does she do differently than from what you do as an actor?
Well, I think that I'll say this. When you talk to Tyne, she might refute it.
Yeah.
I think that Tyne... this is what I learned from Tyne. What I've learned from Tyne is, and I share this, but it was reflected back to me significantly by her, is her desire to never quit on the work. Opening night happens, and you keep digging. You keep looking for things. You keep trying to refine it and make it better and make the experience for the audience better. And I think I have that, but Tyne certainly is a fantastic example of that. I think I've also helped Tyne a lot because I somehow managed to get a lot of joy out of this work. And Tyne beats herself up a lot. And I take her in hand and I say, hey, it's me. Come on, let's have some fun. No one's getting hurt. And I think it's that's good for her, and I think she actually appreciates it, because it's a weird thing to do, being an actor. It's not really it's not really a healthy pursuit to be as a profession, to say I want to do something where I go and have people tell me I'm wrong, I'm not enough, and you describe me physically, my physical attributes, my voice, my hair, my eyes, everything about me is wrong. And then if you get lucky enough to do it, you get to be described all over again as the wrong thing. You weren't good enough, you were too this or too that. It's just an odd thing to do, and it takes an incredible amount of stubbornness or stupidity or ego, or all a combination of those things, to persist in this profession. So trying to find a healthy way to do it has been a goal of mine. I don't believe that you have to be an irresponsible, solipsistic disaster of a human being to be a real artist. I think that a lot of times we love watching our artists self-destruct, but you don't have to do that.
Right. Is there something in the genetic code of the Daily family that bred actors, do you feel like? How did you end up with two actors?
You mean like a congenital disease?
Exactly, just
yes,
like that.
Yes.
Passed on from generation to generation.
I think there must be. I really don't know. I mean, Tyne and I came to it in very different ways. She, when she was 8 years old, knew that this was it. She thought it was glamorous and amazing but that was her. She's 10 years older, so her experience of my parents being in the business was different than mine.
The listeners what your parents did, just so they know.
They were both actors.
Both actors, yeah.
Yeah, my dad
exactly.
was a successful theater actor and did a lot of television, live television especially, and some network television that he was well known for. Right. And my mom quit after having four kids, but she was always a student and a hypercritic of the theater and people's work and being an actor with a capital A. So for all of us, the one thing that we do share is that if you were going to be in the theater in my family, you were not to do it blithely. There was no fucking around. That was the holy place, the temple of artistic pursuit. So if you went in there, you better give it everything you had, and you better be good, and you better reverent about it, because it was considered literally like a holy place. But anyway, Tyne came about it thinking that it was glamorous, and I just thought that actors, because they were walking around my house all the time, were just drunken grown-ups who would not feed me. Basically, when I was 8 years old, it was like, it's 10:30. Someone give me fucking dinner. I'm starving. Because they were drunk and telling stories and smoking and being grand. But I did have an overactive imagination, and I played really hard at things. So when I decided, I knew I could do it. I found out that I could do it in high school. That I had an aptitude for it, but I wasn't at all sure that I had the personality for it. I wasn't sure that I could stand up and be punched in the face 1,000 times before someone said, okay, I'm not going to punch you in the face.
Right.
And it turns out I did.
<Yeah. laughs>
So maybe that's the genetic part.
And so what is it that, what is it about theater in particular that you feel the even desire to sort of carve out the time for in, for instance, in the middle of your busy production schedule for the TV show?
So, on Sunday night, we had a show on Sunday night, and I was in a car driving home with this guy who was an actor who drives to support himself. And he said, what's the difference between TV or movies and theater? And I looked at the clock, and it was 10:30, and I said, I'll tell you what it is. Right now, there are someplace somewhere between 6 and 9 million people, hopefully 9, watching me on television. And I don't know what they're doing. I don't know if they're in their underwear. I don't know if they're eating food. I don't know if they're asleep and the TV is just on. I don't know what part of the country they're in. I don't know what they're doing. But I just did a play for 175 people, and I know exactly the experience they had. I know what they felt. I know what they laughed at. I know when they got suspense, when they felt the suspense and when they got excited, and I know that they clapped at the end. So that's why I carve out the difference, because I like being in the same room as the audience and sharing an experience that isn't mitigated by anyone else, by advertisements or by editing, or no one tells the eye where to go in the theater. It's up to the audience and to the actors.
So it seems like that's the thing you're going to keep on doing, the theater, while you're...
Oh, God, I guess so. part of the idea is you do television also to stack up your chips so you can afford to do theater, which is, a kind of a sad thing, because it's not a place to make a living, really.
Are there any stage roles that you would like to first see your sister in? And are there any stage roles that you would like to play?
Oh, gosh. What would I like to see my sister do? I mean, that's a good one. I'd have to think about that because she could do anything. I would like to do Long Day's Journey and Tonight with my son, Sam.
Wow.
I think that would be a really interesting exercise. It would be really intense, but... he is such a talented and good actor and such a great man. I think that it would be interesting therapy for both of us. And I actually saw the play for the first time in London a few years ago with Laurie Metcalf. And I thought...
David Suchet, maybe?
Yes,
is that right?
David Suchet, yeah. And I thought, this is a play... It's the first time I ever thought, this is a play I need to do. I'd read it a couple of times and thought, oh, my God, Jesus Christ. But but now I think I want to do it.
All right. Well, we look forward to that happening when it happens. Thank you, Tim. Thanks for coming in. Nice
Thank
to talk
so
to you.
Thank you so much. You too. Yeah. Thank you.
Hi, Tyne. Nice to
Hello.
See you.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
So Downstairs was written for you and for Tim. What did you think when you first read it?
I was in love with it pretty quickly. I like Miss Teresa's work a lot. Mm. And... there was an opening. There was an opening thing that just made me howl with laughter.
What was
and,
it?
And the opening monologue of Teddy's.
Yeah.
And I actually sort of lost my composure, which was fun. And I thought, I was first mostly just very surprised that she'd actually gone ahead and done it. It's not very often that I've had Mr. McNally made a play for me, which was wonderful to do.
Yeah. It doesn't happen that often for most people, but
no, it feels real, very privileged.
Right. Yeah. And what in the character did you find was very easy for you to find?
Well, The reason I was attracted to her was because she was sort of against type, as they say, which is a disgusting phrase, but she's sort of meek. And I have been accused of playing strong women all the time. I'm kind of tired of strong women. I know that gives offense, and I don't mean to give offense about the real world. It's just I don't want to get stuck in that. And I managed to get away from that thing with the musical, what do you call it? Should Have Been You,
right?
Which was fun to try. It was another new play, but it wasn't made exactly for me.
Right.
But they were they were properly grateful when I came on board,
yeah.
And I had a lot of fun with that. So it seemed to be some different fields to plow.
Right. And was there anything in the character that you found more challenging to really click into?
Well, the word she's one of those wordsmiths. She's one of those real
Teresa,
theater writers.
The playwright,
Teresa,
yeah.
Yes, absolutely. And so you best learn those notes for real and not try to approximate and not try to guess at them. It is what Maria Callas called the straitjacket in terms of a score. And certain writers, really good ones for the theater, write scores. Or to me, the words become a part of a musical experience.
Yeah. And what do you feel like the play captures about the relationship between siblings that felt really accurate to you?
Well, the first of all thing is that everybody grows up in a different household. Everybody's experience of their parents, everybody's got different parents.
Tim said something very similar, actually.
Yeah. Especially siblings, perhaps.
Yeah.
And so that is something that we'd noticed, we the Daily Kids had noticed. in terms of having a chance to sit down and talk, my sister Peggy and myself and my sister Glynis and Tim all went and interviewed and talked to my dad's older sister once and came back and had a long, long talks about what different families we'd all come from, what different parents we have, what different aunts and uncles, what different grandparents we'd have from each other.
And so this is the first time that you and Tim have acted opposite each other in like a really significant capacity, it seems like. Yeah,
that's true.
And so what surprised you about how he works as an actor?
Surprised me. He's very diligent. You know, we lived together up in Dorset at his farm, kind of on his farm for the first time, too. We were kind of roommates when we were
when you were doing this play. Yeah.
Yeah. But 14 months ago, 15 months ago now. And so that was an interesting thing. That had not happened in our grown-up lives or our growing up. And I think we were good roommates. But we bashed the words together. We had a similar work ethic about the words. Yeah. And got to talk about stuff. Pick each other's brains a little bit.
Yeah. You know?
Like you do when you're working with someone.
Tim says he thinks working with you got you to sort of loosen up a little and maybe enjoy the process a little more than...
I don't enjoy acting. I'm sorry. I'm too old to lie about it anymore. You're supposed to have fun.
Yeah.
Are you having fun? Is like, you know.
Right.
And I experience it as work.
Right.
And the longer I do it and the more I know about it and the more I've done it, the worse I get at it. So the harder it is to get to some kind of standard of... accomplishment, and I feel like an old codger now, but I'm not. Many people experience this as a fun time.
Yeah, right.
God bless them.
And yet, you keep doing it. Clearly, I mean,
I do. Well, I like making a living,
yeah.
and that's always been nice. And I like supporting the people that I love. So that's a kind of one of the finer reasons for being a professional. Anything,
yeah.
I don't know. People keep asking me to do it, and I keep finding out that there are different stories to tell. I do like storytelling, but getting to the place where I'm good enough and practiced enough to tell that story well, it gets harder and bloody harder.
Right. Yeah.
Sorry, kids. You should have seen me in my prime. I'd keep telling Tim we should have done this play 20 years ago, but it didn't exist, and nor did we in our present
Did the fact of
state.
Your relationship and your sibling relationship, did it make doing this play easier, do you think?
Or, I have no idea. I've never done another sibling play with another sibling of mine. Right. How am I supposed to? I have nothing to compare it to.
Yeah.
He's a fun colleague, and so is John. They keep it lighter.
John Fogacino.
Yeah, we're a good trio. I think we balance well, and they've learned to just, you know, leave me alone.
Right.
To do all my you know, breathing and nonsense, and warms up my ritual. Timmy's got his rituals too, and so does John. But those are based on being social and funny and dear and kind to the apprentices and all that stuff. I can't be bothered.
Not yours. Oh, are you? And do you need a lot of time to, I don't know, breathe and meditate?
More than most.
What is the
I don't bring a phalanx of people to, you know, talk me into it.
Right.
But I do have to talk myself into it, and it takes longer and longer. See, you're supposed to talk yourself into it. You're not supposed to talk yourself out of it.
Right.
That's one of the key tricks.
Right. Right. Does that get harder also? Or
Sure. It gets harder to talk yourself out of bed, sweetheart. You know, you're just a baby. You have no idea. What else can I do?
So the Cherry Lane is a small theater compared to some of the Broadway houses you've been playing recently in particular. Yeah. Well, exactly. Do you enjoy this very intimate...
I do for this play, absolutely, and other plays. I think when we talked about coming into New York, which Jim and I and Teresa and everybody wanted to do, but they talked about Broadway and about houses and stuff, and I said, no matter whether it's a dinkier one, whether it's a John Golden or the smaller old houses, this play is the size for us Broadway.
Right.
And then when they said the Cherry Lane, I got very nostalgic about having started here a long time ago, and so I thought this is just right, and I think it is the right play for the right house for the right play.
Right.
And I think that's an important choice to make, because not everybody, the first thing they say to you if they come to see you in a new place, are you going to move it? When is it going to move? Are you guys planning to move it? You know, and some of them should move and some of them shouldn't. And I'm very happy for this play here.
Yeah. Yeah. Your parents were actors. What did you think acting was as a kid, and what did you discover it was then growing up?
I thought acting was the holy of holies as a kid, and I thought it was the temple where truth and bravery and beauty and glorious the words lived.
Do you still think that?
Yes.
Okay. Did your parents give you any advice about show business that really
don't do
worked
it.
For you?
Yeah, no, repeatedly, don't do it.
Right. Yeah. But you ignore them.
No, I listen to them sometimes. I often think they were right, absolutely right. I shouldn't have done it. I should have wasted my life.
What would you have done instead?
I would have been a translator at the UN.
Oh, cool.
Or something that had to do with languages, people understanding. It's the same thing as, I mean, trying to get people to understand what you're talking about, basically. But I would love to have had multiple languages. I'm just too lazy. I pretended, though. I pretended to speak French and Italian.
Of course. That's the job, right? Yeah. How have you seen the entertainment industry shift over the years?
Not much at all. What the traffic will allow, there's always a great deal more stupid stuff than there is good stuff. Right. There's a little layer of good stuff, and there's a tiny layer of excellent stuff. And that's what we can expect. I think maybe we're hearing more voices. You know, it's less restricted in many ways than it has, which is good. But I think if I'd lived 100 years ago, I would also have thought that the theater was getting less restrictive.
Right.
And if I'd lived 100 years before that, I would have thought it was the same thing. I love the way that human beings try to tell each other stories. Yeah. I really do.
What felt right about returning to Murphy Brown? Not a return for you, but Murphy Brown returning in this moment. And
well, they, you know, those are very smart women, and they were 10 years on television with a lot of influence and glory. And I was feeling very desperate about, you know, the condition of our world and all that stuff. And wiser people than I have said, you know, this is what we do. We're actors. What we do is acting. That's how we know how to say anything. That's our pulpit and our, you know, scrubbing the stairs and our work. And so they asked me, and I thought, well, that might be an interesting room to be in with those women.
And was it? I know you just finished your
shooting. Yeah, it was. It was a whole different kind of work that I don't know nothing about. Although I did do one episode of Tim Daly's.
Yeah, I was going to say, what part? The sort of sitcom, you know,
the part where there's an audience and machines. There's an audience, live people, and then in between the live people and the other live people is a phalanx of machines of people, another bunch of people who are all doing their work.
Recording,
it's a really kind of a bastard form. But they were very handy at it. It was fun to watch them do it because they'd managed to figure out how to do an under-rehearsed opening night once a week. And I thought it was terrifying, absolutely terrifying, even more terrifying than regular film television series, because you have the privacy of just screwing up in front of the entire crew. You don't screw up in front of the entire crew and a paying audience.
Right. Yeah.
It's very embarrassing.
You've done theater throughout your career, as busy as you are on screen. And what's kept you coming back to the stage?
Well, I think the work that I've done on film has afforded me to be able to be on the stage, which is, it's kind of first for actors. It is. There's all these arguments about, you know, where does the real work go on? Oh, the work is all the same. You just parse out your energy in different ways. Mm. So, and it's also, there's, when you're on film, you're on frozen time. And when you're in this room with me, you're in live time.
Right.
And it's simple and deep and profound, as far as I'm concerned, difference.
Yeah.
It's not that one's better than the other. One can last forever and they can look at it, you know. There's a real value in that.
Yeah.
Some kind of cellular immortality.
Yeah.
Celluloid, I mean.
What have been your favorite stage roles?
All of them.
Yeah.
I've been in love with all of them when I was doing them. You know, when I was at the Hooksett Theater, the China Dragon Theater in Hooksett, New Hampshire, playing the second shopper from the left in She Loves Me. It was my favorite role.
How was it? When was that?
That was when I was cheating. That was when I was working in between years of school when you weren't supposed to do that.
Oh,
had I gotten
okay.
caught, I would have been thrown out.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Before this, Or maybe after this experience at the Cherry Lane. I'm not sure.
The first time around, when you worked here before. Yeah, what was that show?
That show was a comedy from 1925 called The Butter and Egg Man by George S. Kaufman, the only play he ever wrote by himself without a partner.
Yeah.
And Bert Shevelov was the director.
No, wow.
Gold, yeah. I hope you mean that wow.
That was a wow. That's a name I know.
Yeah. And the girl that they had playing the ingenue was wooed back to Los Angeles because she had a contract with Warner Brothers or something, and they had to start a movie. And I was working as a human stapler in the village, stapling together cosmetic samples. And the agent called and said, go to the Cherry Lane. They want you to read now. And I read, and I went upstairs. They made me wait. And then there were four other women I heard read. And then I came down. They said, you get to start now. And I called my husband of a couple of months and said, bring me the right shoes. I don't have the right shoes. I can't step on the stage without the right shoes.
Are there any stage roles that you've always wanted to play?
Well, there's ones that passed me by, you know, that I thought about, but I never really could answer that question. I could see that's my favorite one. I have to do this. The Shakespeare's kind of done, except for a couple of those Mad Queens, you know, I think I felt I missed my chance at the Delacorte. Mm. Although they asked a couple of times, it was all about timing. Yeah. The actors doesn't have too much choice,
except
to just either keep doing it or quit.
One thing I asked Tim, and he was too surprised to have an answer, was what role would he like to see you in on stage? And do you have an answer for him?
I would like to see him do I Never Sang for My Father.
Oh.
And I'd like to see him do a number of American playwright things. I don't know what he'd do with O'Neill. It'd be interesting. I think Timmer's in his prime, you see. It's different for men. So he's 62 and he's about to grow up. He's suffered from handsome most of his career. No, you go ahead and laugh, but you can suffer from lots of different things, including assumptions about anything. But I think Timmer's got a lot of chops. I saw him do the Caine Mutiny. One of the only actors on the stage who could accomplish being from another era. Mm. There's a lot of wonderful actors who can play their own time, in their own time, and their own experiences, and their own. American training tends to do that. You play a regular fella who's quite like you.
Yeah.
So I want to see Tim play kings and princes and villains, and Richard III. I'd like to see him play.
Cool. And before we go, what's next for you? Do you know that we're coming up
Christmas.
On the holidays? Yeah.
Christmas and a break. And I don't know how long I have three sets of daughters and families to visit. I'm going to take some time through February.
Good.
And then I get to go to a big party in L.A. because of one of these movies I made. So you see.
Oh, yeah. Which one?
The Independent Spirit Award is for The Bread Factory Parts 1 and 2.
Oh, yeah. I haven't gotten a chance to see that yet,
well,
but it sounds like a really interesting movie.
Yeah, it was.
And people really have responded to it.
Quite the other side of the pendulum from the Coen brothers in terms of the Independent Spirit Awards. You got to make your film for under $200,000.
Right.
And good old Patrick Wang had 108 speaking roles and two full musical movies. That's the last musical I did. Although I don't have a number.
Solid.
I don't have a number. I kind of glued the thing together.
Right.
But at any rate, so there's the Independent Spirit Awards.
Yeah.
And screenplay is nominated. I am nominated.
Yeah.
And I want to go to the party on the beach at Malibu in February. Don't you?
Absolutely. Have a great time.
Thanks. Have a good holiday.
Yeah.
It's nice
Thank
to talk
you.
To you.
Thanks, Tyne. Nice to talk to you.
That was Tyne Daly and Tim Daly, starring together off-Broadway in Downtown at the Cherry Lane Theater. If you like what you've heard on this and other episodes of Stagecraft, don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes and subscribe wherever finer podcasts are dispensed. Stagecraft will be taking a couple of weeks off for the holidays, but I'll be back in January with a new year of conversations with the people who make the shows happen, on Broadway, off Broadway, and beyond. Until then, see you at the theater.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com. And of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Suffs. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Suffs celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Suffs has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com.